This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. This Monday, Black Friday is on our mind, and memories of last year when supply chain issues were frustrating retailers and consumers alike. On this very program, on November 5th, 2021, we focused on the supply chain breakdown at the Port of Long Beach, the largest container port in the United States. You may recall those images of dozens and dozens of container ships waiting at sea to unload. President Biden had announced that the port would be working 24/7. Here's how local Longshore Worker Union President Ramon Ponce de Leon described to us what was happening.
Vessels call the ports, and when they call the ports, they berth and we unload the containers. And everybody knows what those look like now because they're all out at bay and anchored. So we unload them and load them back with exports. And primarily the exports that we have been loading back have been empty containers.
Empty containers going out and imports stacking up at the Port of Long Beach in November last year. The impact of that bottleneck rippled across the entire country with supply shortages everywhere. But this year?
Kohl's, Nordstrom, and Urban Outfitters all reporting inventory increases in the double digits from last year.
Retailers were buying in the teeth of a pandemic without really understanding how consumers were going to behave coming out of the pandemic. And therefore, they were stocking up on items that aren't necessarily what consumers are buying now.
That's Mark Matthews of the National Retail Federation speaking on NBC's Today at the end of August. And things haven't gotten any better. Simply put, retailers have too much stuff, and that's led to earlier than ever holiday deals in an effort to clear out their inventory.
Michael Bolton, did you know that Black Friday
is now on Mondays? Sure did.
Which means we're moving Hawaiian Shirt Day to Monday as well. Okay? Thanks.
And not just on a Monday. This year, Walmart began offering Black Friday deals on the first Monday of November and is offering new deals every Monday until Cyber Monday. So what exactly is going on? How did we get from last year's empty shelves to this year's excess of goods? Joining us now to help us understand is Tony Bell. He's an assistant professor at the Rutgers Business School, and he's had over 30 years of supply chain operations and general management experience before that. Tony, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Kimberly. I appreciate it.
So help us understand how we got here. You know, last year, as we said, we had the opposite program, opposite problem in that we could barely find the stuff we wanted to buy. How did retailers end up with all of this excess?
Well, there's a lot that's happened, right, in the last number of years. And if we think about even some of the issues, and let's maybe even start there with some of the issues that we've been dealing with over the last number of years, we have this pandemic, which is really a major event that has happened that we really didn't expect, right? And out of that came some labor shortages. We also have the war in Ukraine, which is increasing our oil prices. We have inflation. We have a looming recession. We have port congestion, as I heard about earlier in the introduction. And if we look at this from a timeline perspective, you know, when we talk about pre-pandemic years, we were looking at retailers, their suppliers, which are particularly retail and consumer goods manufacturers, and their suppliers, raw material and component suppliers, who are all operating in more of a just-in-time environment. Right, in an effort to try to minimize their inventories. It was all about a strategy to try to receive goods as close as possible to the time that those goods are actually needed to either be produced or delivered to a consumer. And when we look at inventory, you know, right, inventory can both be an asset and a liability, right? Because carrying too much inventory is a significant liability because too much inventory ties up capital, which could be otherwise used for reinvesting in the supply chain, for sales and marketing, for research and development improvements. And so, you know, having that liability then becomes a problem. So we go from this, you know, just-in-time environment of trying to keep our inventories as low as we possibly can while still, of course, making sure service is intact. And then we move to the pandemic, right? Which caused an immediate shutdown of activity. So people just stopped eating out, they stopped traveling, they stopped buying things for the most part. So we did see some online activity as well. But you had a number of millions of workers that were actually laid off. You had consumers even with jobs that had stopped spending. You had retail sales that basically plunged. I think the number was about 20% over the first few months of the pandemic in early 2021, with the largest declines really in clothing and accessory stores, about 89%, and then department stores down about 45%. So you move from that now to post-pandemic, or at least towards the end of the pandemic, where we started to see an increase in home goods and home improvement type of products, when consumers started to receive stimulus checks. And they also started, of course, to look into some of the savings that they started to build as a result of the pandemic. And now you get to post-pandemic, when now you have this sudden surge of consumer demand and activity. Right. So we see these figures on consumer spending, I think $1 trillion shift to goods, you know, from services as a result of coming out of the pandemic. So that's a huge shift. That's a big switch to go from, you know, having very little inventories to then coming to a pandemic where everything pretty much shuts down and there's no activity, to all of a sudden this huge surge in consumer demand. And so how do organizations then try to match that or meet that demand, it's pretty difficult to do. So that's kind of why we are where we are today.
Yeah. Well, Target is one of the retailers impacted by this inventory glut. During the company's third quarter earnings call, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer John Mulligan spoke about shortened lead times, the time between goods being ordered and arriving in the warehouse.
Compared with the second quarter, lead times improved by about 15% in Q3. And we're more than 3 weeks shorter than a year ago. While we were really pleased to see this improvement, the acceleration was faster than we expected, causing many overseas orders to arrive earlier than needed. As a result, the team has been reducing lead times on our future orders, just as they extended them during the pandemic.
So, Tony, I want you to help understand exactly what he's talking about here and understand how the chain supply process begins. How early do retailers need to start preparing for their orders, and how do they balance that timeline?
No, that's a great question. So typically, you know, retailers will start to order maybe anywhere from 3 to 6 months in advance, right? So a lot of that planning has to happen pretty early, and those orders have to be placed, you know, far in advance. But that 3 to 6 months then started to extend to about 8 to 12 months, you know, especially as retailers started to try to build up those inventories post-pandemic to try to meet that demand. Now, what ended up happening is we still thought that there were going to be some major disruptions, or there were still going to be some disruptions from a supply chain perspective in terms of product being able to even get to the ports and get into these retail outlets. But we realized that the supply chain was even more resilient than we thought. And so, you know, as Mr. Mulligan spoke earlier, you know, he basically said that there was that they probably did or improved upon, you know, the ability to transport those goods a lot faster to the ports and a lot faster, you know, into those retail outlets than expected. Another thing too is I think the difference in categories. And so retailers like Target and Walmart really started to have to think more about things at a category level, because what they found is, you know, as home goods at one time were starting to have a lot more demand, that demand then shifted, right? So it shifted from, you know, all of these goods to then services, for example. So I even work, believe it or not, I have a travel business, a travel agency. And so I'm seeing even that shift from purchasing products to actually now folks trying to just get out of their homes and travel to all these great places. And so because you're seeing that shift now, that of course has created even more of an excess in inventories for a number of different product categories.
I'm glad you brought that up, because just in preparing for the show, I was thinking about my own spending, and it went from goods over the last couple of years to experiences, now traveling, going to shows, doing other things. So I want to talk a little bit, and we're going to dive in more about more of the factors that led into where we are. But first, I just want to ask you, why would a retailer be in a hurry to get rid of this stock? What does it mean to hold on to these goods too long? What negative impact on the retailer might there be?
No, absolutely. They don't want to hold on to it because if they can't sell it, right, if they're accumulating all of this inventory, and inventory, again, it's a good thing because that's the product that they sell, right? That's part of their product portfolio. But it's a significant liability if that product isn't selling. You know, and so if we're seeing all of this excess inventory because of the consumer behaviors and some of the economic conditions, then that causes a major problem because now that's inventory that's on the books, capital tied up where these companies can't reinvest or invest in other areas of the organization. They have to sell off that inventory in order for them to have cash to be able to spend that, right, on reinvestments. And so that's really, I think, the biggest impact, you know, on these retailers trying to figure out ways to offload, you know, this excess inventory as much as possible. And, you know, you have Walmart, you have Target, you have Kohl's, you have Best Buy, who are increasing their markdowns in order to try to get that inventory off their books. And they're doing other things as well. Of course, they're canceling, unfortunately, canceling orders that they've planned for months in advance. But because of this volatility, it's become, you know, this issue now.
And how much, if at all, has the recent labor shortage impacted the situation?
That's another impact, right? So that's another factor. So we definitely have seen labor shortages and what they're calling, I think, the Great Resignation, you know, as a result of the pandemic, where you're hearing that so many folks didn't come back to their jobs because they were either fed up, they were overworked and underpaid. But then you wonder where, you know, I also wonder where are they all going? I still don't know where they're all going. I know some have started businesses, you know, some have found other ways to try to make money, but, you know, you're wondering where they're going. But this labor shortage has also caused, you know, major rifts in the supply chain. So you don't have folks working at the pier.
I'm going to pause you right there and we'll talk more about it after the break. We're discussing how retailers went from empty shelves to a glut of inventory. I'm Kimberly Atkins Store. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins Store. We're talking today about the complete change that retailers have gone through over the past year, from supply shortages that left many consumers frustrated to now an excess that's caused companies to offer markdowns and early sales as a means to clear out their inventory. We're joined by Tony Bell. He's an assistant professor at the Rutgers Business School with over 30 years of supply chain operations experience. And joining us now is Ala Valente. She is a senior analyst at Forrester, a global market research company. Ala, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Kimberly. Great to be here.
So before we get into what this inventory excess means to consumers, I want you to chime in a little bit. We've been talking about the causes of this glut, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that, too.
Thanks for that. There are a lot of causes for this. You know, in 2020 and early 21, the signals were so extreme, and brands, they bet big. They really thought that this type of demand was going to endure. They also misinterpreted the trends for what they thought was going to be a new normal. So perhaps they thought that we were just going to continue to live out of our pajama pants and ride our Pelotons and improve our homes with our pandemic pets and feed our sourdough starters. But that wasn't exactly what happened. When things started to open up, when consumers started to go back to work, when we went out for dinners, when we started traveling, those trends really proved to just be symptoms of the current condition and not something that was going to hold out over time. So when they decided they were going to boost their orders, which then, of course, the distributors boosted theirs, and then manufacturers had to ramp up and so on, it created this bulge in the supply chain. And it's really going to take a while before we can balance that out. I guess you could say that they really overcorrected for 2021.
And Ala, what does this mean for consumers in the short term? So right now, there are lots of deals. There are sales that have been going on for weeks. They probably will continue into the first part of next year. Is this just something where consumers get the better end of the situation?
I mean, it actually really is. In the short term, this over inventory glut means that shoppers get more selection and they get better prices. If they shop early enough, they'll be able to get a really good selection of what they're looking for. If they shop later, they'll take advantage of even more discounts and better prices. So it depends on how quickly retailers will be able to clear their inventory. I know that there are some that are considering this pack and hold strategy, where if they have excess inventory that's seasonal, they'll pack it away if they have the real estate to be able to hold it, and they'll just try and sell it next season. But for those that don't have that real estate, that need to clear their shelves to make room for all of the new inventory, unfortunately, they're going to have to take a hit.
Mm. And Tony, what do we have in excess at these retailers? Have you seen certain areas where we have this glut, as opposed to other things where the inventory seems a lot smoother?
I do. So where I'm seeing some of this excess is really around home goods, right? So, you know, you have your televisions, you have your appliances, your other types of home goods from, you know, like home goods from the home goods store. You have furniture. So those are the types of products that I'm seeing in more of excess than others.
Yeah. And we knew some of these situations were coming because we know that there was, we had things like inflation, and which decreased the demand, but then now people are coming out. I know it's always difficult to balance that inventory, you know, incoming, outgoing formula, but what did retailers get so wrong this time?
I think it was just the overcorrection because they didn't want to be in the situation where the holiday was upon us and they didn't have enough inventory, because that's lost opportunity. You know, here's something that I found to be really interesting, is that while so many retailers are now struggling with double-digit inventory increases and so much stock in on their shelves, Macy's doesn't have that same retail glut. And what's really interesting is that late 2021, early 22, they were using the data from their credit card transactions, and they were able to pick up on trends that revealed some cracks in those shopping trends. So, you know, they saw that what consumers were buying had changed, the patterns were changing, perhaps even how much they were spending was changing. And so, currently, Macy's only has about a 7% increase in inventory, whereas some of their competitors are much higher than that.
Oh, that's a really good point. Tony, I want you to talk about that too, what some retailers got wrong, and also what retailers are getting right and what tools they're using, like Ala said, looking at these credit card transactions in order to try to make better decisions.
Absolutely. No, I think that was a great point that's made. And this is where we get to planning, right? So we when we talk about the various aspects of the supply chain, plan, source, make, deliver, a lot of it really starts with the planning process. And so how do we improve our forecasting? How do we improve our overall, you know, sales and operations planning processes or integrated business planning processes to ensure that that information is brought into those meetings and into those sessions? You know, when we talk about S&OP, I think it's a great example of how functions come together to talk about what that planning horizon looks like and what the demand would look like over the next, you know, number of months, whether it be all the way up to 18 months. And so how do we better leverage better information. We can do that, of course, through, you know, better data analytics, the use of AI technologies. You know, there's a number of ways we can bring that information into the conversation faster so that we can make better decisions.
Yeah. And Tony, I want to talk a bit about how external factors can affect the inventory we see in retail shops, everything from the broader economy and the rise in inflation and interest rates to the war in Ukraine. How do these external factors affect what's happening in terms of what's on the shelf?
Absolutely. So that, yeah, we talked about, I think I talked about some of those in the very beginning, but when you talk about labor shortages, for example, that are a result of the pandemic, well, that's still causing some issues for maybe some products where there still might be some availability issues, right? Where we don't necessarily see, you know, that excess in inventory. You know, we talk about the war in Ukraine, which of course has increased our oil prices. Now, of course, the government is trying to regulate and monitor and manage that as much as possible. But that, of course, increases diesel prices, which impacts freight cost, right? So now our freight costs are higher, and a lot of retailers have to deal with that and be able to figure that out. Inflation, you know, of course, may impact, you know, the demand of a number of these products. And we may go back or swing back to, you know, even less of a shift in higher demand. And we may see some of that demand soften as a result. You know, the looming recession, you know, plays into that as well. Port congestion is still, you know, a partial problem. So we're still seeing all of these external factors that play into some of the other things that the retailers have to try to figure out as a result of the supply chain. And I'll tell you, they have to be fortune tellers, right? As a result of this, you know, I'm gonna defend the retailers a little bit more just by saying, hey, you know, they almost have to be psychics in a way, because there's been so much volatility from an internal and external standpoint that it's difficult to manage. But you know, they're working it through the best they can, I think.
Talk about some of the external factors that we've listed or any others that you see here. And also the point that Tony made about the looming recession, right? None of us really knows what's coming in the future. Might there also be this aspect that consumers are waiting to make some of these purchases until they have a better idea of what the economy might do?
So I don't know that retailers need to be fortune tellers. Maybe they just need a better magic eight ball. Forrester, we call this systemic risks. And these are those external forces that create events. And when those events materialize, they create these systemic risks. So it's everything from pandemics to climate change to geopolitical tensions, even the rise of digital attacks. We see more ransomware attacks on the supply chain. These external forces are happening. These events are going to occur whether or not a retailer is looking at those signs or not. What they can do is, first of all, identify what those factors are, be able to assess what that potential impact might be on their supply chain and in what areas, on what products, in which geographies. And they can certainly make some calculated bets in those areas. So, for example, we see that the rise in cyber attacks on suppliers, on manufacturers, on logistics providers. We also see the rise of bots going in and taking up inventory and getting to products before consumers even have a chance to put them in their shopping cart. I mean, bots broke the internet when it came to Taylor Swift tickets. So anyone who is looking to make that a Christmas gift is probably out of luck at this point. I don't know that you needed necessarily to be able to predict the future to see that that was happening, because that was happening very consistently and building from 2020 all the way through mid this year. At the same time, and this is something that it's a little frustrating, because when we talk about the looming recession and whether or not that recession happens, we don't know. We do know there's record inflation, but at the same time, there's still good job numbers, there's still consumer spending. So whether we call this a recession in the typical sense remains to be seen. But the average recession is about 10 to 12 months long. At the same time, this whole supply chain crisis, if we look at 3 years that we've already been here, plus maybe another 12 to 18 months that this might go on before supply chains really have a chance to balance, I mean, we're talking 4 to 5 years. Now, retail CEOs are planning for economic uncertainty. They're planning for this economic risk factor. I don't remember them planning for supply chain imbalances. I don't remember them taking proactive steps to try to de-risk their supply chains. So why is it that we're so good at thinking and planning for economic uncertainty, but not uncertainty in the supply chain? And, you know, perhaps it's this this notion that, well, we just have more practice with economic uncertain conditions. But I do think that there are some very clear steps that retailers and all companies can take when it comes to mitigating the risk in their supply chains.
So I just want to pause for a moment and say that tomorrow's On Point show will be about Ticketmaster and those Taylor Swift tickets that everyone was trying to get. So tune in to that tomorrow. But Tony, I want to get back to the point that Ala was making. Why have retailers, despite becoming better at dealing with economic uncertainty, been so bad at that supply chain uncertainty?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll go back to even some consumer product manufacturers that I've worked for, you know, in the past, because it also comes back to them, right? Retailers, you know, especially like the Walmarts and the Targets are selling products that are purchased, you know, finished goods that are already purchased from these consumer goods manufacturers. And I've worked for a number of them that actually have risk response teams in place, you know, specifically to try to identify any types of risks in the supply chain. And so they saw a lot of this coming even pre-pandemic years, you know, and not to say that these retailers don't have the opportunity to, I guess, to improve through a number of different ways that I think, you know, Ala was talking about. You know, we still have to understand the, I guess, amount of just volatility and the amount of just unstableness that we've experienced over the last number of years. So, you know, yes, you know, retailers can definitely improve. There's a number of different ways, I think, for them to improve. But I think we definitely have to understand that the magnitude of these major events that are taking place and how they have an impact on the supply chain, and not to discard the fact that, you know, a number of these retailers and manufacturers have had risk response actions and teams in place. I've been a part of those, and I've worked for organizations that have. So getting it right, you know, isn't always that easy, right? So, you know, the forecast is never right, but you want to get as close as possible to having the best forecast. And I think now we have a lot of practice, to be honest with you. So there's really no excuse, I think, going forward, right? So, you know, I'm sure Ala and many will hold these organizations, like myself too, will hold many of these organizations accountable because, okay, now we know what to expect, and we should be able to figure out ways to improve our risk mitigation strategies.
Ala, what impact do alternatives have? I'm thinking of things like off-price retailers, right? Consumers might be waiting for some of these goods to end up in an outlet, for example, at an even better price. Or resellers, you know, as we're getting more environmentally conscious, we see the rise in resale sites. How much of those are impacting the inventory at retailers?
That's actually a really interesting angle, because one of the top systemic risks for 2022 was the rise of values-based consumers. And consumers are starting to look for retailers that align with their own values, whether that has to do with sustainability or ethical treatment or other types of values. And so we see that going to consignment stores and thrifting and recycling is becoming a much bigger trend than it was in many years past. And so if retailers, like I think about retailers like Levi's, who says, you know, you want to be able to fix your jeans rather than buying a brand new pair because you don't want to contribute to the sustainability crisis. Great. Bring them into the store. We'll fix them for you and we'll give you a discount for other merchandise. If done right, retailers and brands specifically could actually use that as an opportunity to lure shoppers back into the stores.
Yeah. So we are discussing the inventory glut after a year of scarcity and what it means for consumers and retailers. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Did you try to buy Taylor Swift tickets, feeling frustrated? Maybe you waited in line for hours and never even got them. And then later that night, you looked at another site and saw tickets for five times the original price. All the fingers in the Taylor Swift fiasco are being pointed at Ticketmaster, which has a near monopoly on ticket sales. So we want to hear from you. How was your experience with Ticketmaster, and how would you like things to change? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683, or leave us a message in pristine broadcast quality by downloading the new On Point app. Just search for On Point Vox Pop, that's On Point VOXPOP, in your app store, or click on the Connect tab at onpointradio.org. Today, we're talking about the inventory glut, how last year's shortage of supplies has led to this year's over preparation. We're joined by Tony Bell. He's an assistant professor at the Rutgers Business School with over 30 years of supply chain operations experience. And also with us is Ala Valente. She is a senior analyst at Forrester, a global market research company. So I want to talk now about the future and when we can expect this supply chain problem to return more to normal. Here's Target's executive vice president and COO John Mulligan again at the company's third quarter earnings call.
Even as we continue to look heavy on the balance sheet, our inventory is in a much healthier position than earlier in the year. Because of the heaviness you're seeing today is due to the early arrival of fresh inventory we are planning to sell. For example, by early November of this year, nearly 90% of our key Q4 programs had already moved into our distribution centers and stores. In contrast, last year, just over half our key programs were in the network as of the same time frame.
So, Ala, what is he saying? He's telling us this is good news. What does this tell us about when we can expect the supply chain issues to return to normal?
Well, he's talking about the inventory levels, which are certainly one aspect of getting supply chain right. But it's not really the entire solution. Yes, we need to do a better job at planning for the correct levels of demand, so getting that supply-demand balance equation. But at the same time, we need to do a better job at identifying other issues that can come up that might impact the supply chain. And if we really are thinking about restoring supply chain to its former healthy state, we need to think about all of those unplanned events that we're not necessarily thinking of right away. So, for example, how much longer is the war in Ukraine going to last? Are there going to be, or are we expected to see climate chaos, especially in certain parts of the world? How might that impact the suppliers in those areas? What about the record inflation? How much further is it going to peak? And how is that going to impact companies that are suppliers or maybe suppliers of your suppliers? So before we can start to see supply chain health increase again, we need to think about not just balancing inventory levels, but also looking at all of these other factors as well, and being able to assess the risk and plan accordingly.
Yeah, Tony, to continue with that, given all of these external factors that we may not know what will happen and we don't have control of them, is it even possible to predict when normal will look like normal again?
No, and Ola makes a really great point. You know, there are other issues outside of just the inventory issues that we're seeing. Transportation costs, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So we're seeing the war in Ukraine. There's definitely an impact there. So as we try to figure out or forecast how long this war may go on, we also have to try to figure out what is the government going to do in reaction to that, and how is that going to impact oil prices? Because of course, that's going to have an impact on, you know, diesel, which has an impact on transportation costs, which are increasing. So retailers have to deal with that. They also have to deal with some of the labor shortages that we still have. Now, we had driver shortages even before the pandemic, which caused some issues, you know, just around being able to transport product from point A to point B. But the current labor shortages have just made that, of course, even worse. I know Ola talked about climate control as well and its impact. So we're seeing many more storms, which are also having, you know, more of a disruption in supply and more of an impact on the supply chain. Inflation, all right, we talked about, and how that may impact demand. So all of these factors, you know, organizations will, and retailers and their manufacturers will have to figure out, you know, how all this kind of plays into the supply chain and trying to figure out how we respond to these many risks. And, you know, they may have to buffer up these risk response teams or these risk management teams that they have within their organizations to truly try to figure out just internally and externally how those factors may impact the supply chain moving forward. You know, balancing and trying to get back to where we were before, I think it's going to take a while. What is a while? It really depends, right, on many of these mm-hmm. other factors, years potentially, mm-hmm. to get back to at least a more level place where we were before.
Ola, what kind of damage could these companies face in the meantime when they're trying to figure out how to get back to normal, at least for them?
I mean, they face financial, impacts. They could possibly lose customers. So if it's the holiday season and I want to buy something specific, if you don't have it, I'm definitely going to go to one of your competitors. They're going to face, the alarm on my phone went off today to say that railroad strike that didn't happen over the summer because they had reached a potential deal. Well, that deal is now off the table. So the strike might actually happen. If that does happen, it's not just the supply chain that'll be impacted. It's also labor, because a lot of the local rails, right, like those are commuter rails. So how are you even going to get employees that are working in retail, into stores? That's going to be an issue. There are so many things that are, I guess, forcing and squeezing supply chain, and this notion of resilience and efficiency, right? So these are two forces that are really at odds. A very efficient supply chain is a very lean supply chain, which is a very just-in-time supply chain. You start to overcorrect by creating too many buffers, and that's how you end up with an inventory glut. But at the same time, you need to have those types of redundancies because you really don't know what the next situation is going to be or what the next risk event is going to be. So it's really about balancing the efficiency of the supply chain with the resilience of the supply chain and the other factors of planning and forecasting and inventory. They'll work themselves out eventually.
Tony, when it comes to that balance, is there a danger that companies may overcorrect and we may see another shortage of goods?
That's possible. It's very possible. We're hoping that doesn't happen, and we're hoping that these retailers and manufacturers can better anticipate some of these risks before they happen. But it's tough, right? You know, we talked about some of these words: flexible, agile, adaptable, responsive, resilient, efficient. We have to do all of these things, right, yes, for the supply chain to work. And it's almost impossible. I mean, you know, I don't want to be pessimistic, but it's tough. It's really tough to get all of this right. And so I'm hoping that with more of a focus, you know, in these areas of, you know, forecasting and overall planning, category management, really looking at or taking more of a category level focus, you know, again, applying technological solutions that are out there as we're seeing technology improve and increase, to be able to make that even, you know, more just easier to plan. Alternative transportation, there may be a little bit of shift to air freight, you know, as a result, you know, expensive, you know, but an option, you know. So it's I think it's all of these things that we have to consider to try to get this right.
And one thing we have to consider, Ala, is changing technology. I mean, a lot of the goods that we've been talking about, goods for the homes, things like televisions, things like that, you used to drive to the big box store to get them. Now, I think a lot of people, certainly I, the first place I would look would be online. How has that affected what is happening? And do online retailers have the same kind of inventory glut?
Here's what's interesting about online retailers is that they may not necessarily know whether it's you, Kimberly, who wants to purchase that flat screen TV, or perhaps it's a bot that's taking up inventory so that you can't get to it. And maybe they'll abandon the shopping cart without even checking out, which means that the inventory that you just abandoned might actually be there, and now the retailer has to hold on to it. Let's put it this way. I know exactly what I'm going to be doing during this holiday season. From a risk management perspective, I'm going to be shopping for next year. I mean, we have the inventory glut. I'm going to try and purchase as much as I can for next year, whether it's holiday decor or gifts that I can give during the year, or maybe it might be, you know, handing out IOUs and cashing in when the inventory is available. But I think that online retailers face some real unique challenges, especially because of what's happening with their inventory systems, what's happening with sophisticated technology algorithms that are taking up their inventory. And frankly, retailers and brands in general just need to do a better job at deploying technology for supply chain risk management. Not necessarily. I mean, we've been using sophisticated technology. We've been using predictive analytics. We've been using AI to help us plan what's going to be in style, when we might need it, how much of it we need, when we need to ship it. But what about using that same technology to plan what happens when multiple things go wrong? And what happens if they go wrong at the same time? And will we still be able to meet our numbers? Will we still be able to get our products into the hands of consumers, right? That's where the investment in technology needs to get ramped up.
Yeah, Tony, how else can retailers improve their preparation and their demand forecasting moving forward?
Well, I want to touch on that technology piece because I think that's really important. I think some of the challenges are the cost of some of the technology, and it's not easy for some of these retailers to spend so much money. I've seen it. You know, I've seen where, you know, even working for a consumer products manufacturer where, hey, we have it in our plan to implement these, you know, these great technologies to better enable our business processes, to make them better and to make our supply chain efficient, adaptable, all those things I talked about. but it costs money. It costs a lot of money, and then it takes time for them to actually make sure that they get that in their business plan. I mean, so there's all these other things that have to happen, but I'll tell you, retailers and manufacturers will have to get better. They'll have to get, you know, just better at bringing those technologies in. I don't think at this point they really have a choice. You know, predictive analytics, AI, all of those things are truly important. I think it's a great way to improve their sales and operations planning processes and to make those processes more efficient as well. You know, you have these functions that meet, you know, typically on a rolling 4 or 5 weeks to try to agree on what that forecast will look like. But a lot of them I see are still using Excel spreadsheets. You know, when I used to be part of those meetings, seriously. I mean, it's sad, but it's true.
He's right. So how right.
It's true. So how do you, you know, best incorporate, because there's better technology out there that doesn't cost that much money that they can incorporate into those processes. So that will be ideal. It'll be important. And they're going to have to definitely focus more on getting those processes right.
And Tony, Ala touched on this a little bit, but what can consumers do now to shop in a smart way, given an understanding that we just provided about what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you, the good news is that there are deals. So that's a good thing. So they should start. Hopefully they started shopping early because, you know, again, just and doing research, I think, is important as well. So, you know, research across different retailers to find out what's going to be the best deal for them. Now, that may hurt specific retailers, but for the shopper themselves, if we're looking at it from their perspective, that's a really important thing to do. Even as far as product availability, I would say that there still are some product availability challenges out there. So if consumers are looking for a must-have item, buy it. Buy it when you see the deal. Don't wait because more than likely it's not going to be available later because we're still kind of battling or trying to figure out. And consumers don't know what's available and what's not. You know, we have better insight into that, but they don't. And so, you know, if you see something you really want, then hey, you know, definitely buy it when you see it at the right price. But I'll also say, you know, given the fact that we have these price hikes, given the fact that inflation is where it is, I think it's also important for customers to be smart about their purchases. So like I said, compare those prices across retailers, but also create, you know, a budget for themselves. If you can't afford it, don't buy it. You know, leverage store credits, leverage coupons you may have, because I definitely see where spending might start to decrease. And, you know, this inflation may impact people's pocketbooks. And so budgeting is really important.
And Ala, any last thoughts about what consumers can do to make informed, smart decisions right now?
I'd say be willing to make trade-offs. And if you have a product in mind, also create a list of maybe an alternative that would be acceptable, because you may not find everything you want, right? If you buy early, you'll get the best selection. If you buy late, you'll get the best prices. But if you have a plan B and a plan C, then the chances of you getting what you want when you want it is much higher than that.
Ala Valente is a senior analyst at global market research company Forrester. Ala, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Tony Bell is an assistant professor of professional practice at the Rutgers Business School. He has over 30 years of supply chain operations and general management experience. Tony, great to have you join us.
Thank you.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.